Hi, this is Mike Hunneke. I'm the co-chair of the Sanctions Export Controls and AML Practice Group at Hughes, Hubbard & Reed. Welcome to yet another episode of Red Flags Rising. With me, as always, is Brent Carlson, director of the Berkeley Research Group, and we're thrilled to have with us a special guest today, Dana White. Dana is the managing director at the Juno Collective and has a really amazing background in U.S. national security. Today is Tuesday, May 27th, and we're starting this recording right around 12 noon U.S. Eastern. Dana, thank you so much for being here. We're really happy to have you with us.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Brent, for having me. It's really an honor. I have a background mainly in Asia Pacific. So I actually studied at the University of Chicago East Asian Languages and Civilizations and had a focus on ancient China, which actually ends up being very relevant to modern China. I was based in Hong Kong with the Wall Street Journal. I studied in Beijing at the Capital University of Economics and Business. I also studied in Korea. My first entree really into national security was I was the Taiwan country director at the Pentagon. I was the chief Pentagon spokesperson. Some of the challenges, the soft challenges that our technology faces from the PRC. It's a fascinating topic for me. I was just recently in Taiwan. And so I'm just really excited to share whatever I can and get right into it. It's a serious issue and it's only becoming more complicated.
Well, Dana, I can't think of anyone better able to give our listeners a sense of what happens behind the scenes before you get to, let's say, for example, the Department of Commerce announcing to the public national security concerns. We see all the time when new export controls come out or when they're modified, or really whenever the Department of Commerce and other departments are issuing guidance to industry, there's always this foundation of national security concerns. And we've even had some recent guidance from BIS that seems to turn on this. Brent, what did we see last week that came out that would set the stage for where Dana's expertise and experience could be helpful?
Yeah, we saw some interesting guidance that came out. The industry guidance to prevent diversion of advanced computing integrated circuits. And right at the very top of the guidance, it says, quote, BIS has determined that advanced computing ICs have the potential to enable military intelligence and weapons of mass destruction and uses. It specifically cites the PRC, the People's Republic of China, in this as well. This comes right up front. So there's got to be big reasons driving it. It would be interesting just to sort of unpack it to help people connect the dots.
Dana, for a Department of the United States to issue statements like this and warnings like this, what happened previously? What was going on behind the scenes?
So it's an amalgamation of actually a lot of different elements of the U.S. government and the national security apparatus that comes together. Now, you may only end up seeing the final statement in Commerce, but behind the scenes, there could have been congressional input. There could have been CIA, the entire intelligence community's input. It will definitely have DOD's input because one of DOD's greatest challenges is dual use technologies, right? And dealing with the politics of it. You have to balance the politics of what kind of technology are we going to give and why. And I like to think about how people think about it in just simple terms. It's my four P's. It's people, places, purpose, and protocols. Every decision comes from who has it? Who are they? One of the things we identified was the biggest sponsor of espionage from the PRC is not the Ministry of State. It's the Ministry of Education. So yes, all of these Chinese visas for students, they're going to Stanford, they're going to Harvard, they're going all over the country learning quantum physics. We freely give this knowledge. When you think about who are the people who are coming, there's also, very frankly, an entire industry in which Chinese nationals come to the United States, they have children, they get their blue passport, and they go back to China. In the intel world, if you come back as a US citizen, right, you have access to a great deal more in terms of security clearances than you do as a naturalized citizen. Just factual, you can go further faster. So that goes to the people. And then the places, where is this going to be used? So there needs to be verification of where is this actually being used? You're shipping it, but where is it? Do they have a presence on the website? Are they a true entity, right? So it goes to places. Where is it going? And then purpose, what's going to be done, and this is how it's going, and this is where it ends. And then it's the protocols of how are people observing these laws. That's where I think commerce plays a really critical role.
Stepping back a little bit, Dana, when the U.S. government determines that, okay, certain items in certain places can be used for a particular purpose, I don't want to be a bit flippant, but they're not making it up, right? I mean, if they think that a certain level of technology can facilitate the development by an adversarial country of WMDs or will be used by the military intelligence community in that country, they're not just talking about pure hypotheticals, I imagine. Is there some way to summarize in a little bit more detail how a determination like that would be made?
So you're absolutely right. They are not making it up. There is clear evidence, and it's very open. No Chinese company, none of them. I don't care if they're making shoelaces or they're making Apple phones. No Chinese company is independent of the People's Republic of China's apparatus and power, and they will be subject to those administrative authorities. The U.S. is not making it up. They are not being overly cautious. In fact, we need to get even more focused on exactly how we're going to combat these things, because the threat is growing. It's the strength and the Achilles heel of a free society, right? Is free information. What is really important for business leaders to understand that your government is not trying to curtail your business. But what it does need is to ensure our national security. Let's also talk about knowledge, because knowledge is power. It's really important to follow the trail, not shell companies. Like, where is it going to? Okay, I understand it's not going to Beijing, but it's going to Cambodia. Those are the things that the U.S. government knows, and that informs the instructions that they are giving and the laws that they lay out.
It might be a bit of a moving standard, the benefit, but also perhaps the curse of the high probability standard that Brent and I have talked about a lot, is that it's malleable. It changes country to country, circumstance to circumstance. Part of what the government has been doing by issuing more and more guidance is, frankly, to move that standard. It's at least telling companies, we think the standard is here. So you could disagree, but the reality of what's going to prompt the government to react, to investigate, to prosecute is where they think the standard is. Like it or not, it's there. And as Brent likes to say, the signals are loud and clear.
100%. You're absolutely right. It's really important for people to understand within this new administration, it's very pro-business, but it's also very pro-America's security. And when you're talking about some of these advanced technologies, it is really important that we maintain very strong regimes around our technology. I hope that our business leaders do understand that they are a part of our total national security apparatus as well. And they play a very important role, because it's not as simple as, oh, well, I didn't give them missiles. Yeah, but you gave them technology to direct those missiles. So that's very important for people to understand, that we all as Americans play a part in protecting technology.
A lot of companies would much prefer something less interesting and less dynamic than that for their markets, but it really requires companies looking to have any type of business into China to really be reading the news, thinking critically, and staying on top of these things, because it can change like that. Our policies can change like that. The government is expecting companies to be on the front lines. The first person to know of a commercial transaction, of a shipment, of a purchase, is the company. As these risks and geopolitical contests push Chinese or Russia or Iran, North Korea, to become more and more sophisticated in how they procure the things of ours that they want, you're not dealing with a normal trading partner. It requires a different mindset. We were talking, Brent and I, the other day about, you know, what are real data points that you can look at when you're doing a risk assessment. It's not just getting a second end-use certificate. Someone in the PRC who is doing something bad will give you 100 end-use certificates. They'll sign it day and night. They'll sign whatever complicated certificate you want them to sign, or whatever enhanced certificate you want them to sign. That's not relevant to mitigating your risk. You need to be thinking about trade flows over time. How have your trade flows changed? Is there something that's too good to be true? if a new customer appeared in Kazakhstan in March of 2022, and then something bad happens, our government is rightly going to look at you, maybe it's even years later, and say, what did you honestly think was happening? The Seychelles aren't going to outer space. Smugglers don't update FedEx tracking information. This is an important time to be thinking geopolitically about risk and having an open mind and open eyes about what's happening.
I couldn't agree with you more. Our business leaders are our front line. You have to be incredibly mindful of what are the long-term implications of my actions, because you're 100% right that this could come back to haunt you, and the threat assessment changes. Whatever you did 5 years ago might have different implications and have applied to something that now has the attention of the US government. That can be a problem. I don't associate any malintentions, but businesses exist to satisfy shareholders and to make money and to keep people employed and profit. But it is so very important that national security has to stay at the heart of everything, because if we are compromised as a nation, your business isn't going to matter anyway.
I have a question regarding the evolution of change. We started to see these changes in terms of these national security issues arising in the U.S.-China relationship. There's a lot of folks who are still operating under the presumption that this is China 20, 25 years ago, post-entry into the WTO. How has it changed, and when did you see that start to occur?
So when they came into the WTO, once they had that, the Chinese have been very good about telling a story about who they are. We, frankly, have not been all that good about revising and evolving our own methods, our own intelligence, our own protocols around what it means to have this rising power. The Chinese are really good at changing narratives and turning things so you look over here, the diversion, and you aren't thinking about this. You're like, it's nothing. And then all of a sudden, they have capabilities.
Regarding China's military-civil fusion, you had some really good points. You've got technologies that are increasing in terms of dual-use functionality, both civil and military applications. We talked about companies satisfying shareholders, but now you've got China's military-civil fusion dynamic going on. Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic and how it's different, how business leaders should be thinking about their assumptions in operating in that market?
Well, number one, every business leader should know that when he's talking to any kind of business leader in China, he is talking to the CCP. Some people may find that very harsh, but I'm telling you, there is no such thing as an independent business in China. The Chinese government can reach its fingers into any entity and do what it wants when it wants. So as a business leader, you have to understand that is the society in which you're working. And listen, it can be very advantageous, right? State-backed companies generally do quite well. But then you as a business leader have to say, why do they do quite well? And what am I doing, or what am I contributing that is helping to enhance Chinese national security capabilities? We also need to understand that China's in it to win it. We need to think really strategically about what we need to make sure doesn't happen, and also make it very easy for government to say, this is how you were wrong. Because without it, the Chinese win. They benefit from our chaos. So what are we doing, right?
Totally right. Dana, tell us a little bit about the Juno Collective. How do you help people?
Sure. We're a marketing and strategic communications firm. I help clients understand risk, how to mitigate those risks, and communicate it. It's not just the tactics. It's also, what do you say about whatever's happening? So how do you mitigate risks and get ahead of things, which can often be a tough sell? People don't tend to think about things until there's a problem. And that's the worst time to think about it, not only from a business point of view, but frankly, from a reputational point of view. Things move so quickly now. The best defense is a good offense. Most people, their reaction is, well, nobody knows about it. We'll just leave it. And if something happens, we'll deal with it then. Wrong answer, right? Everybody makes mistakes. Crises happen. You have to communicate. Unfortunately, you don't handle it well. Then the worst thing of all happens. Congress calls you. That's bad.
You're entirely correct. The best way to mitigate the risk of that crisis ever happening is to get ahead of it on your own time and in your own way. Because otherwise, it's going to be the government forcing you to deal with something quickly and in their way, which is probably going to be different than how you would approach a problem. If they come at you when something bad has happened, you're not going to be calling the shots anymore. They are.
100%. And you're absolutely right. It can also be powerful for you to go proactively to say, hey, I have some concerns. This is what we did. Let me lay this out for you, because other companies will have done the same thing. But if you were the company that came and said, you know, we did this earnestly trying to follow the rules, but we're not sure that we're in compliance. What a superhero you become. You become the gold standard, and your competitors are in the dust, because not only are you showing that you are conscientious, you are showing that you care about the technology, you care about America's national security and the role you play in it.
Great points. And really, the issue is now really competitors. If there's an industry-wide issue going on there, we're now at a stage where whoever's going to get through the door first is going to be able to set the gold standard and leave their competition behind.
It's really another page out of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act playbook, where the guidance is an invitation for people to come forward sometimes, or at least change their own behaviors, and then be able to point back to that change, or even being able to raise questions about what the government wants at that time in an environment where they're not the accused, and where someone else hasn't come to the government, or the government doesn't get other information to suddenly start to suspect them. This all reminds me of one of the great stories from the enactment of the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Not that the legislative history is a page turner, but one of the key moments in that is that Northrop was being interrogated by Congress about alleged bribes being paid in Europe. The lawyer for Northrop said, well, we were just following the Lockheed model. And that dropped like a bomb, because Lockheed had just gotten a huge taxpayer-funded bailout. What happened next were three hearings where the chair of Lockheed was interrogated. We're not advocating for our listeners to run first to Congress if they have any problems, but it was an example of when you act proactively and with a vision of where you want to be as a company, you have the opportunity to set the tone. Otherwise, the tone's going to be set for you.
100%. And I think this is such an important conversation to have with the rise of AI and with all of these technologies that have the ability to create chaos or misinformation that the Chinese and others will use to change the calculus, to make the calculus murkier for us. Again, being proactive, I can't say enough about it, especially as Brent said, if it's an industry-wide issue that the industry is struggling with, go and ask questions. Truly be the sentinel where our business leaders can be sentinels. I think it will prove advantageous for America as well as their own business.
Well said. And I think the biggest mistake we've seen across many different types of regulations is where people grasp at straws to maybe cherry pick a sentence or two, or to look at a particular summary of the law that someone else has put out, and they're like, ah, that's what I want this to be. And they ride that interpretation all the way to the bottom. And the government comes in, it turns out, well, they might have had a different interpretation than you did, including by looking at that particular sentence in context of what comes before and after. What this next paragraph say, the policy objective within which this guidance has been issued, that can be really dangerous. Again, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
What you said is exactly on point.
Policymaking is very glacial, up to a point, right? Then there's a tipping point. Once you have an industry-wide issue or major events happening, it'll reach a tipping point, and then it's not glacial anymore, and you're facing the big momentum.
You're right. That is the worst situation you ever want to be in Washington, right? That's the worst situation. Now they're just going to hit you with a hammer. You have to come in proactively to help, not to deflect and diffuse. Congress is theater. It's not a court of law. It is theater. You have got to know your venue. Those types of people, places, know where you are and who you're dealing with.
Big difference for sure. We talked in an earlier episode about preparing for congressional inquiries. This is not a court of law where everyone gets a chance to make their own argument while the other side is quiet and there's an impartial adjudicator sitting there, right? It's political theater. It's a circus. One of the most valuable experiences I had as a young lawyer was actually representing someone who was not doing well in congressional hearings. To your point, only if you have the credibility, the nuance, and the way of working with them that understands where they're coming from, anticipates their questions, anticipates their problems, or after the fact comes in a helpful way, not blasting them in the press or on social media, but saying, look, I think I know what you're trying to do. Here's how we can both get to the right place together is a much better way to go about that. Well, Dana, I'm very happy you're here to witness firsthand, back yet again by popular demand, Brent Carlson's Managing Up. Brent, we've learned a ton speaking to Dana today, and it's been invaluable. What's your Managing Up for this episode?
Managing Up phrase of the day comes from the Hollywood classic, The Wizard of Oz. And it's simply this: we are not in Kansas anymore, Toto. The world has changed. We all have to recognize it and adapt accordingly. And those businesses and the leaders of those businesses that recognize that ahead of time are going to leave their competitors behind in the dust in this new world. If you're still operating on the old assumptions, that's just a losing battle of attrition that's going to end up in a road that goes nowhere. Understand that we're playing in a whole new ballgame. And it was really a lot of great insights from Dana to illustrate that and connect those dots.
Well, that concludes this episode of Red Flags Rising. Dana White, thank you so much for being our guest. How can people contact you if they're interested in reaching out?
Well, you can go to www.juno-collective.com, and I'm Dana at juno-collective.com. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. It's really important, and I'm glad you're proactively giving people tools to address what isn't easy. It hasn't been easy for anyone. It's a different culture. They're playing chess and we're playing checkers. So for you to have this and have me on, I'm thrilled. I'm just grateful to you guys.
We will include in the show notes information about you and the Juno Collective. I encourage listeners to go there and we'll get in touch with Dana. I think she could be helpful with a lot of problems people are facing these days. Brent, Dana, be well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Be well.